This is Success Journal Podcast number 17. I'm Chris Whitting. Coming up on this episode, people decide three things about you within 30 seconds of meeting you. We'll share what they are and how to make a good first impression. Then, a top business guru shares secrets of sales success, stuff you never learned in school.
I know of only one college in the United States that has a bachelor's degree in sales. So we basically give kids these business degrees and send them out with no sales training.
And a man discovers a vitamin drink and fortifies his income. Plus, could your finances use a makeover? An expert tells you how to do it in just 6 days.
We are a society that wants instant gratification. We want it now. And I think that's one of the reasons why we just don't save for retirement. Because for many of us, retirement is 10, 20, 30, 40 years away.
And an inventor takes a chance and creates a money-making machine. Success Journal starts right now. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/successjournal. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
The Success Journal Podcast. Informative advice from leading experts. Helpful, practical tips to enhance your career, your income, and your personal freedom. The Success Journal Podcast with Chris Whitting.
Hello and welcome. Great to have you here for today's podcast. You know, not long ago, I attended a podcasters conference. Its official name is Podcast Movement. A very good event. But one thing that struck me was just how many podcasts there are these days. And it seems more are coming out every single day. So I'm very grateful that you have chosen to listen to this one because there are so many options out there to choose from. Our audience for this podcast numbers in the thousands already, which really blows me away. And every time we check the numbers, it just keeps growing. So again, my personal thanks to you. We really, really do appreciate you being here. It means a lot to us. Well, first up on today's podcast, you know, people decide three things about you within the first 30 seconds of meeting you. According to image consultant Sherry Masonave, the three things are based on how well-dressed and well-groomed you are. And the first one is your education level. The better your appearance, people will assume you have a higher level of education. The second is socioeconomic status. The better dressed you are, the higher socioeconomic level you're perceived to have. In other words, you have more money. And the third is desirability. In a professional environment, the more professional you look, the more desirable you will appear. For example, women who wear tasteful makeup earn 20 to 30% more than women who wear too much makeup or no makeup at all. Too much or no makeup, according to Sherry Masonave, sends a message of low self-esteem. So I guess the message there is, your appearance does count. Well, our first 60-second Success Journal story today can be headlined with one simple statement. Concentrate and make money. Rich Brown had a thirst for information. While grabbing a quick lunch at a diner, he asked the waitress what brand of orange soda he'd just been served. She said it was nothing special. They made the stuff themselves with a no-name orange concentrate. That fact stirred his imagination. Rich liked the drink and felt it had potential. He teamed up with the company that made the concentrate, convincing them to sell the product to the public in ready-to-serve cans. As Rich learned, not only was the stuff tasty, it was healthy too, with a full day's supply of vitamin C. So, Rich gave the drink a name you know, High C. High C fruit drinks now have sales over 50 million. When it comes to selling anything, there's a lot to learn from the masters of sales success. Joining us to talk about this is Dr. Ivan Meisner, founder and chairman of the business networking organization, BNI. He's been called the father of modern networking, and Entrepreneur Magazine calls him the networking guru. Today we're going to talk about one of his many books, Masters of Sales, Secrets from Top Sales Professionals That Will Transform You into a World-Class Salesperson. Ivan, I'm guessing one of your top keys to sales success is networking with others. Am I right?
Absolutely. You know, there are many different aspects of the sales process, and I certainly don't consider myself an expert in all aspects of sales and selling. But when it comes to relationship selling or referral selling, I think I've got some pretty strong expertise having developed the world's largest business networking organization. And that's where I came from personally in the book, but we have contributions from many other people which have other areas of strengths in selling. Brian Tracy, and Harvey McKay, Tony Robbins, Jack Canfield, well-known people in their own fields who have expertise, obviously, in sales and marketing. So you get a lot of different perspectives from people who are well-known and people who are successful in the process.
I know for many salespeople, they got their first serious training from one of the old guard. In other words, a salesperson who's been around the longest, who knows the secrets of selling. Yet that kind of a system with today's turnover levels and corporate changes doesn't really seem to exist anymore. Would you agree?
I would agree. There is a lot of turnover in the sales positions, and so you don't get those people who have been around a long time. We also don't teach this in colleges and universities. You know, I know of only one college in the United States, one, that has a bachelor's degree in sales. St. Catherine's College in Minnesota is the only one I know of that has a fully accredited bachelor's degree in sales. So we basically give kids these business degrees and send them out with no or very little sales training. So, of course, one of the first things that a company does when they hire a new employee is they have to send them to a Brian Tracy or a Tommy Hopkins or a Ziegler training program because we don't teach it in colleges and universities. And you add another element, there's not that longevity with some of the sales divisions, and so there's no one to teach them in-house with a lot of experience.
Well, you start out your book talking about attitude, because that's the foundation of all of it. Could you just share some thoughts about that with us?
Absolutely. You run across a lot of people where they may be complaining about business, and it does no good to complain about business. Half the people you complain to don't care, and the other half are glad you're worse off than they are.
True.
So it really is about starting with a positive attitude and passion. The predecessor book to Masters of Sales was called Masters of Success. And one of the things we talk about in Masters of Success is this whole idea of passion. Vince Lombardi Jr. quoted his father, the legendary football coach, Vince Lombardi, when he once said, "I'd rather have a player with 100% passion and 50% ability than a player with 50% passion and 100% ability, because I can train that guy with 100% passion. I can train him on how to do what he's supposed to be doing. I can't train that guy with 50% passion to be where he's supposed to be doing what he's supposed to be doing. He'll be out waltzing around the field instead of focusing." And it's the same in sales. It's the same in business. I'd rather have any employee with 100% passion and 50% ability because I can teach him how to do things. I can't teach attitude. And that's the hardest thing to have. And that's why we start with that.
Now, I've spoken with Brian Tracy in the past. He is serious about goal setting and following through on goals, and you have him talking about sales goals in this book. Share that with us.
Brian Tracy is the master, I think, of the sales and marketing process, and he believes, and we say in this chapter, that selling goals and life goals are related. You know, where you want to be in your life, your success in business and in sales is going to determine where you're going to be in your life, and it's very important to set annual income goals, to put them in writing. Review them monthly and weekly. You just don't hit what you don't measure. You can't hit what you don't measure. If you're not aiming at something, you're not going to achieve it. It's sales 101. Here's the funny thing. Some of the things in here are sales 101. Some may be sales 401. But a lot of them, almost all of them, are simple concepts. And the funny thing is that I've learned over the years, things that are simple are oftentimes not easy.
Mm-hmm.
And these are simple, but not easy. If it were easy, everyone would do it. But the irony is a lot of people go, "Oh, that's too simple. I don't need to write my goal. I know what I want to do." So they don't do it. But it's that tracking the goal and staying on top of it and saying, where am I? And how am I achieving it? And what am I doing wrong? And in effect, what I like to talk about is reverse engineering your goals. So you set your annual goal or your five-year goal, and then you reverse engineer it. Where do I need to be in 4 years, in 3 years, in 2 years, in 6 months, in 3 months? and you reverse it back. And that's the part that's not easy. It's a simple idea that's not easily implemented. And what I have found is that people who are really successful in business understand that simple ideas aren't easy to implement, but they do the hard work necessary anyway.
You have a lot of stories in your book that really make things clear. And I'm just wondering if there's any stories about goals or goal setting or how effective they can be that you might be able to share with us.
There's no story on goals that pops into my mind directly, but one of my favorite stories in this book is the story about the Portuguese man of war. And it's a story that I contributed. And it really talks about taking the advice of other people. I was in Maui out in the ocean and got hit by this jellyfish, and I looked out in front of me about 20 feet. There was this very large blob, and I thought, my goodness, that looks like a Portuguese man of war. So I swam ashore, and there was a cabana boy, and I said, gee, it looks like I've been hit by a Portuguese man of war. And he looks at my chest. He said, yeah, looks like a Portuguese man of war. So, well, what do I do? He said, first of all, you have any chest pains? I said, no. He said, do you breathing okay? I said, yes. He said, all right, you want to go down into the front lobby, turn left, there's a little store. In the store, buy some Adolph's meat tenderizer and some vinegar. And you want to spray it all on your chest, powder your chest in, and rub it all in. And I'm like, yeah, right. Okay, thanks. So I thought he was goofing on the tourist. So I go to the next guy, some waiter at the pool, and I asked him. I said, hey, I think I got hit by a Portuguese man of war. He looked at me and said, yeah, looks like a Portuguese man of war. He said, are you breathing okay? I said, yes. He said, any chest pains? I said, no. He said, okay, just go on down to the lobby. Turn left, there's a market. Get some vinegar and some Adolph's meat tenderizer. Powder up your chest, spray it all on, and rub it all in. I'm thinking these guys had a staff meeting to figure out how to goof on the tourists, right? So I go to the manager, and I ask him the same question. He gives me the same answer. So I figured, okay, fine, I give. I get into the store, and there's no Adolph's meat tenderizer. At least I couldn't find it, and I started to get chest pains. Mm. I'm literally taken back to the front desk where I collapse, and they call the paramedics on me. Paramedics come running in with big boxes, and I think they're going to pull out a defibrillator and jumpstart my heart because I can't breathe and I have these chest pains. Yeah. Adolph's meat tenderizer and vinegar, and they lather me up. And the amazing thing is that within moments, it turned around. The pain almost immediately subsided. The enzymes in the meat tenderizer counteract the toxins of the poison, and the vinegar acts as the catalyst to get it into the system. And had I just paid attention, it really goes back to your first point about the old-timers in business, in sales. They're not around to teach. You know, had I just paid attention to the people who knew better, the people who lived there, the people who'd seen it before. But no, of course not. I'm an educated guy. These guys have to be goofing on me. There's no way that could be true. And I didn't take their advice, and so I ended up with a pretty big paramedics bill and some pretty bad pains. If I had just paid attention and listened to them, I wouldn't have had any of that.
We're talking with Dr. Ivan Meisner, author of many books, including Masters of Sales. Speaking of books, there's one I recommend, and it could easily be called life-changing, yet it's been around for decades. And when I say it was written by Dale Carnegie, you'll probably assume I'm talking about How to Win Friends and Influence People, but no, that's not the book. The book I think is much more powerful is titled How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. Again, that's How to Stop Worrying and Start Living by Dale Carnegie. It's old school, but it's really full of brilliant time-tested advice that will hit you right between the ears. And the audiobook is unabridged, and it's narrated by the late, great Andrew McMillan, who will keep you riveted to his words. And you can get the audiobook, How to Stop Worrying and Start Living, absolutely free. Just go to audibletrial.com/successjournal. Again, that's audibletrial.com/successjournal. Dr. Meisner, in terms of selling products and services, are there significant differences between in-person selling versus selling on the internet, or are there more things in common?
Well, there are some things in common. One of the nice things about selling via the internet is the residual income. You don't have a brick-and-mortar building to sell from, and it operates in 24/7. You can even do business internationally. You know, I've had some success with online businesses that are downloadable products. But you also have to remember that, you know, you're providing a service and you have to develop relationships with people, and so it's not going to build on its own. Also, the competition is dramatic on the internet. I mean, there's just so much competition. And so you can't completely eliminate the relationship process if you want to build an internet-based business.
It seems like if people are interested in a product or service, they become voracious information gatherers on the internet. It seems they can't get enough opinions, facts, viewpoints on a product or service. So the more information you can put out there that's legitimate, the better for a prospect.
Very true. And one of the authors in the book talked about niche communities. Stephen Van Yoder talked about niche communities as they apply to the products or services that you're offering. And it's a way to get word of mouth and buzz marketing going on about your products. And of course, you got to be prepared for both the good and the bad. And there are some companies that completely stop any negative discussion. And of course, as a rule, those communities tend to be not utilized much, whereas other communities have, within reason, positive and negative conversation about products. And because of that open, sort of honest approach, they do get some bad things said about them, but the communities are so large that the positive things tend to overwhelm. And of course, that's one way to build buzz on the internet, is to allow a community discussion about your products and services. I believe we truly live in a high-tech, high-touch society, that the more technologically advanced we become, the more important it is to continue to build personal relationships, because technology will not replace people in the selling process completely, not in all areas, not all the time. There's still going to be products and services that need to be offered, can best be marketed individually. Certainly, I run a networking organization, the world's largest networking organization, BNI, and we have people we're meeting every week, and until those meetings can be held via holographic images like Star Wars, you know, it's just not going to replace that personal contact of getting together and getting to know and trust each other. So I think the internet's a great tool to build sales. It's not going to replace the selling relationship process in all areas.
Let's talk about how to sell yourself as an expert. This is a growing career field. What can you tell us about ways we can sell ourselves as a consultant or an expert?
I wrote an article for Entrepreneur.com a couple years ago about how writing articles can build your credibility, and that by building your credibility, you get more business and referrals. It's really part of the networking process in terms of building you as a brand and your reputation. And I've been talking about this for many, many years, but I stopped talking about it because I found that 1% or 2% of the people that I told to go out and write articles and build themselves as a brand would actually go and do it. And so I stopped promoting it until I had a guy say to me, you know, Ivan, why aren't you doing that anymore? It's because, you know, very few people do it. It's one of those simple ideas that's not easy. And he said, yeah, but it's turned my business around. So here's an idea that I'm going to share with your listeners. Go out there and write, and you will substantially increase your business. It'll take a while for you to build the credibility, but only 2% of your listeners are going to do it, because people are just unwilling to do the hard work necessary to achieve success, or they think that there's some other secret that's got to be easier. Building you as a brand through credibility, that's a great way to build your business and not be just a commodity. And it works, but people oftentimes don't do it.
And why do you think they don't do it? Is it just laziness, or maybe trying to go for a shortcut?
I think the secret to success without hard work is still a secret. and people are looking for a different secret. They think that it can't be that. It's got to be something else. I can find a way. And, you know, frankly, there are authors out there, I would say, are misleading the public and saying, hey, look, I've made millions working 5 hours a week. You can do it, too. My guess is that the only way they've done that is by selling them the books that they're selling them, and not from having actually built a business. Because most of the people I know who have had long-term success understand it really is about hard work. I would add that it's also about good choices. So you have to make hard work and good choices. But yeah, there's no secrets to it. You do these things consistently and you're going to be successful in business.
I remember reading a quote from Victor Kiam, who was asked how he was so successful. And he said, I'm actually no brighter than anyone else. I was the only one, though, at my company willing to work from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. for many years. And that's why I'm successful. That says a lot right there.
It does. But, you know, it also leads you to another subject. And that is, do you have any other life if that's all you're going to do?
That, yeah, and that's not necessarily success if that's all you're doing is working either.
I'm inclined to agree with you. It also depends on how you define success. And if your definition of success is money, then that's certainly one way to achieve it. It's not my definition of success. To me, success is having the time to be able to do things that I want to do, and the things that I want to do do take money, so it really requires a balance. The thing is, and a lot of people really struggle with this in sales and in business, is having balance. And I'll say to them, look, you'll never have balance if you're going to be successful in sales. You won't. But you can have harmony. You may be working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day, but you don't have to do it forever. Do it for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. I'm working 60, 70 hours a week, but then I'm taking several weeks off spending time with my family so that you have harmony in your life. And so that if someone came and took a photograph of me, they'd say, this guy's lazy. How could he possibly have any level of success? He's been hanging out at home for weeks. Okay? But yet, if they'd have taken a photograph 3 weeks, 4 weeks earlier, they'd say, oh, this guy's he's a workaholic.
It's about balance. It's about...
Balance means, you know, you got to have everything equal. And my argument is that you can't have everything equal at any one time.
Mm-hmm.
So you create harmony. So that at one point, you may be working long hours for a little period of time, but then make sure to take time off so that you get what some people might call balance. It's not just, to me, it's not semantics. It's more harmonious than it is balanced, because if anyone looked at you at any one moment, they would think you were out of balance. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Yes, I agree with you. I want to move on to the last part of your book. You talk about closing. What are some thoughts you can share with our listeners about closing and how that relates to the sales success experience?
I think the bottom line in closing is, and in the sales process, is that you've got to truly believe that you are helping your client or prospect. That if your goal is to just close a deal and walk away with money, you're never going to be a long-term salesperson. You have to really believe in the product and the service, and you have to be moving the client or the prospect towards a decision or an answer that will absolutely help them in some way in their business. And if you do that effectively, you'll close a lot more deals. But it's got to be really to help them, not to help you.
Obviously, in putting a book like this together, talking to all these top sales professionals about becoming, as you put it, a world-class salesperson, there's a lot of inspiration in here. And I'm wondering if you could just leave our listeners with that sort of a feeling.
Well, sure. There's two things I would say. First, sell is not a four-letter word. Well, okay, it is a four-letter word, but you know what I mean. It's not a four-letter word. Selling products and services to the public is what allows this entrepreneurial society and other entrepreneurial societies around the world to exist. Doing it with integrity is the key. And you do that with integrity, I believe, through the relationship selling process. And that there's three phases to it: visibility, credibility, and profitability. And that if you go through the selling process with those three phases, that is, you are visible to people, you establish credibility with those people, and then from visibility you move to credibility, and from credibility you move to profitability, that if you do that in the relationship process, you're building long-term sales relationships that will lead you to your sales process being more about farming than about hunting. And I really believe that that's the key to long-term success in sales and in networking.
Ivan Meisner, Ph.D., founder and chairman of business networking organization, BNI, and he's author of Masters of Sales. Ivan, thanks for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And still ahead on Success Journal, how to do a 6-day financial makeover to put you on the right track. Plus, the story of a man who invents a money-making machine. Robert Pagliarini is a certified financial planner and has written a book titled The 6-Day Financial Makeover. Robert, it takes a lot of people their whole lives to screw up their finances. So how is it even remotely possible to get things straightened out in 6 days?
It's really not that hard. You just set yourself up, do a couple of things that are really beneficial that you can do really quickly, very simply, and that will actually have an impact going forward.
In your book, you take some unusual stances on quite a few things. You write that people need to focus on financial independence rather than saving for retirement. Can you explain that?
We are a society that wants instant gratification. We want it now. And I think that's one of the reasons why we just don't save for retirement. Because for many of us, retirement is 10, 20, 30, 40 years away. And so we think to ourselves, well, that's so far away. I'm going to save tomorrow. I'm going to spend today and save tomorrow. So if we can start looking and thinking in terms of financial independence, then all of a sudden that becomes much more of a today thing, because I define financial independence as being able to support the lifestyle that you desire without having to work. So if we talk in terms of financial independence, all of a sudden people become a little bit more motivated to save.
Does that mean you think IRAs and 401ks are things people should avoid?
Not at all. I think 401ks, IRAs, I think retirement is a great, great way to save, and I think those are great vehicles to save for those things. I think we should do both. Certainly max out the 401k if possible, but one of the issues with the 401k is, and I think a lot of people make the assumption that if I put money into a 401k, then that's all I need for a successful retirement. When in fact, even if you max out the 401k for a number of years, you still might not have enough for retirement. So I say definitely max out the 401k, but also you might consider saving for retirement or for financial independence outside of that 401k account.
Something else you wrote that's interesting. You believe young kids are better savers than adults. Why do you believe that?
I think it all comes down to focus. I mean, if you think back to when you were a kid and all of a sudden you had an idea in your mind that you wanted to buy something, maybe it was a new toy, maybe it was a new bike, whatever it was, as soon as you knew what you wanted, all of a sudden you were completely immersed and focused on getting that. So you would babysit extra, you would mow some more lawns, all of your savings would go toward this particular goal that you had in mind. And I think it's because of that saving and that unrelenting pursuit of what it is that we wanted that they're much better at attaining the goals than we as adults are.
Most people have one or maybe two savings accounts. This is another area where you challenge conventional wisdom.
It is. I think for most people, they might have maybe two, possibly just one investment account where they dump all of their savings into. And what I like to do is focus on what I call goal-oriented investing, and that is for each of these major goals that we want to accomplish, maybe it's a trip to Hawaii, maybe it's a new car, a new house, whatever they may be, I suggest opening separate investment accounts for each of these goals. And that way, when you're putting money into each of these accounts, you know that instead of having XYZ account, it's now, you know, my dream house account. So every dollar that's in there, I know is for this particular goal that I want to achieve.
Interesting. But on the other hand, it would further complicate your finances, having more statements and more accounts and so forth.
I get that a lot. Yes, you are getting more statements in the mail, but each of these statements, you know exactly what that statement's for. You know exactly that every dollar in there is for a particular goal that you're trying to achieve.
Does the average person need a financial planner, or can they pretty much do things on their own?
You can probably get 90-95% of the way there. If your situation is fairly standard, fairly typical, where a financial planner really adds a lot of value is that they hold you accountable. And, you know, there are a lot of personal finance books out there, and a lot of people buy them, some people read them, but very few of the people that read them actually implement the advice. And so that's where a financial planner can come in, because they'll call you, they'll email you, telling you, all right, did you get that done? Did you get it implemented?
Robert Pagliarini, author of The 6-Day Financial Makeover. Thanks for joining us today.
It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Before we hang up our headphones for this episode, let's share one more 60-second Success Journal story. This one about an inventor who takes a chance and creates a money-making machine. Over a century ago, a California man named Charlie Fay noticed something. Charlie was mechanically minded, and while visiting a tavern, he saw a clever mechanical poker game that paid off winners with a cheap cigar or a free drink. Being mechanically minded, Charlie figured he could improve on that, so he designed a contraption that he hoped would improve the odds of making a profit. When he showed tavern owners his prototype, they loved it. especially the three spinning wheels with clever symbols and the cash payout. You know Charlie Fay's invention. He called it the slot machine. Others called it a one-armed bandit, but it earned Charlie plenty of change. And I might add that years ago, I went to an antique coin-operated expo and ended up buying an old slot machine, which took quarters. And it was completely mechanical, so it was not something you plug into the wall. Probably made in the 1930s. And it was soon making me money because guests would come over to my house and start shoveling quarters into it, but it only would pay off once in a long while. Well, I finally sold that slot machine to a happy buyer about a year ago for more than I originally paid. So that investment was no gamble for me. It turned out to be a good one. Well, that's a wrap for today's podcast. Thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Chris Whitting for Success Journal, wishing you a very successful day.